good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. This is Emmanuel Goldstein. Boy, does the sound quality from St. Pierre sound great or what? Obviously, I'm not where I said I was going to be last week. I'm right here in New York, right here in hot, sticky, muggy New York City. And, boy, I couldn't be happier. Well, you know, I learned a lot, though. I learned a lot on this ill-fated trip to the French island off the coast of Canada. I learned a lot about Canada that I really didn't want to know about. It turns out that they're very particular in kind of a bad way as to who precisely gets over their border. I actually didn't have a problem, well, except when I got into the argument with the guy at the border crossing. But a person I was going with had been arrested 9 years ago, more than 9 years ago. And everything was fine. You know, there wasn't any lingering record. There was no probation or something like that. It was something in the past, something a long time ago. Yet they found this. They found this on their computer, and they said, nope, sorry, we don't want people like you in our country. I just could not believe it. So we actually had to turn all the way around after driving all the way up to the New York Thruway crossing by Montreal. Had to go all the way back down. I'll tell you, it's quite an experience to plan something like this out. To plan on going away for about 2 weeks, get everything all set, and have some idiot at the border decide you don't look right. You see, that's how it all started. You know, at first you have to go through the guy at the toll booth or whatever. You know, the guy that asks you why you're coming to the country and that kind of thing. And I got off on the wrong foot with this guy right away. You ever have these conversations where, you know, you both start talking at the same time and you don't hear what that person says and you don't sync up, you know? And because of that, and probably because of the way I look, this guy decided to flag us and say, okay, you have to go into the little building. Never happened to me before going into Canada. It happened to me a lot coming into the United States, but never happened going into Canada. And I really didn't think even at that point that there was any issue. I always thought Canada was going to be a lot more open than we were. But it seems they have this this crazy law or rule or addendum to something that says if you've ever been arrested, they can keep you from coming into the country for a period, I guess the maximum amount of time that you could possibly have gone to prison, or even if it's just something they don't like, they can keep you out for that reason. I've heard stories since from lots and lots of people about being banned from Canada because they took part in a demonstration, or because they showed up on a list, or they were just deemed undesirable for some reason. It's really sad. It's really sad because, you know, I was looking forward to this. It was a way of getting away from all the stress and tension of the city. And more importantly, it was going to a place that I thought I liked, and now I'm not so sure. You know, it's it also gave me a taste as to what it must be like for people trying to get into this country from other places. And I guess it's just a microcosm of what that must be like. Being asked all these questions, having your whole life analyzed and scrutinized. I mean, imagine this. Imagine that you made a mistake in the past, long, long time ago in the past, and they bring it all up again, long after it's been forgotten, long after you've picked up the pieces and moved on. They throw it back into your face, you know, and they say, oh, because you're, you know, you were convicted of a crime this many years ago, you're not eligible to come into this place. And the thing is, it's not even something that goes away. You have to file all kinds of forms with the consulate. And you have to you have to contact the authorities in your country. You have to contact the FBI, send them your fingerprints, get notification back from them that you are in fact not a fugitive, contact your local police department, have them verify that you are not in fact a criminal in your local neighborhood, get all kinds of letters of recommendation, have all kinds of pay stubs and things like that just to enter the damn country. So, this wasn't happening to me. I could have just walked in. This was happening to a friend of mine, and it just made me sick seeing this happen and knowing that this is occurring all over the place. So it's it really took all the fun out of it. And even if we could have figured out a way to get in, I don't think it's worth it at that point. What do you think, Mike? You think you've heard of people having problems like this before?
Happens all the time. Yeah. I understand, yeah.
I didn't realize that. I really didn't think it was that bad. I mean, I realized, you know, maybe people who are wanted for crimes, okay, I could see them maybe being pulled over. But people who, you know, have a past history, like far in the past, they're still marked. And I think it's part of this whole mentality that we have where somebody is convicted of a crime and it has to follow them around for the rest of their lives, you know, be branded and never thought for a second that you could actually rehabilitate yourself and live a better life. You know, we strip people of the right to vote. We basically paint their house with big red letters saying a criminal lives here. You know, it's getting to the point where people just want everybody imprisoned or put in the system in one way.
Well, and prison is big business.
It is. It certainly is. And you could sort of see Canada's point to some degree when literally 1 out of 10 of us are involved in the system in one way or another, either in prison or on probation or something like that. So a country with all these quote-unquote criminals right next door to you, you have to be a little bit wary as far as, you know, who you let in, who you don't let in. I mean, they do have a lot of space up there for people to roam around in. But it's really sad. And the other thing is that there's a big contrast between the border crossing going into the States and the border crossing going into Canada. Everybody on the Canadian side was all young and clean and, you know, all exuberant about their job. And on the way back, even after we got turned around and we're heading back into the country, they still were intimidating to us in the United States. I mean, they didn't search us or anything like that. They just asked us a bunch of questions. But the guy just had this attitude about him, like he was a cop and he was going to, you know, kick your ass if he did anything wrong. And, you know, we're just explaining to him, you know, they turned us away because they didn't, you know, approve of, you know, one of the people's records in the past. And yet he still had this persona of threatening attitude about him. Meanwhile, on the Canadian side, it's like we got kicked out of the country by the high school yearbook committee. And it didn't make it any better, though. You know, these guys didn't have guns. They were all about 18 or something like that, all, you know, perky and enthusiastic. But they still were bureaucrats, and they still, you know, did not know anything about bending the rules or even how to interpret the rules in a way that's not so strict as to be ridiculous. I mean, you know, basically, if you get a speeding ticket, you may not be able to get into Canada because they don't approve of that.
I'm for that.
Well, okay, maybe we should just keep all the speeders in their own respective states. They can speed around
in their respective homes. Let's not let them drive around the state.
Well, then they'll start knocking over lamps and things. I don't know. I think we're getting way off the point here. Jim.
The Canadians are ones to talk, aren't they? I mean, didn't a couple of the Al-Qaeda come in through Canada?
I don't think that's fair, though. I
mean, didn't that guy that they arrested at the Millennium who drove in north of Seattle with a station wagon, a truck, I don't remember, full of explosives. He was going to blow up the Space Needle in Seattle. Mm-hmm. He drove in from Canada he got the explosives.
Right. He could have gotten the explosives in the States and driven over to Canada. What's the point?
Well, the point is the Canadians are bitching over somebody with a 9-year-old record, which is practically expunged. Mm-hmm. And here they are letting the rotten Al-Qaeda types come into our country. Wait a minute. I'm sorry. It's not contradictory. They're getting rid of the scum as they see way.
I don't think
they don't really care about us.
Have you been to another country?
I've been to Canada.
Okay, well, they
California.
Don't check you on the way out. They check you on the way in, maybe, but they don't check you on the way out.
You know, that's interesting, because every time I've gone to Canada, U.S. Customs has asked questions on the way out.
Well, that's strange, because we didn't even see U.S. Customs on the way out.
I don't know.
The first person we saw was the guy I had trouble talking to.
I've been to Canada 5 times, mm-hmm. once through Detroit, and 4 times through Buffalo, mm-hmm. and every time they asked questions.
You see, it wasn't necessary for anybody in Al-Qaeda to go to Canada. They could have come to the United States. They didn't need that extra step. So it's
right.
I just don't think it's fair to say, you know, Canada let down their guard. I don't think that's true at all.
Okay, it's unfair to Canada. I was just being mean to them because they were mean to us inadvertently.
Well, no, I mean, they weren't. I still like the country. I still like the people. I regret that I'm not there now. Actually, I would be in St. Pierre now, which is part of France. But, you know, you have a bunch of idiots that interpret the law in weird ways, or you have a really bad law that was written by idiots. I don't know which one it is. You guys can sort it out up there, but it's going to be a while before I take another trip up there, because I just don't want to deal with stress, you know? And border crossings are not supposed to be that kind of stress, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, yeah, I know they are. But I like to save it for when I get home, you know. That's because you always know you're going to get in the country at some point. They're going to harass you, but, you know, going to other countries, they're supposed to be friendlier. You know, I always thought that was the case. In fact, you know, we came very close to heading to Iceland instead. That turned out to be too damn expensive over there, but otherwise I'd be in Iceland now.
Too long a drive.
It's also a very long drive, yeah, but... When we checked to make sure there weren't any crazy rules with that country, basically they said the thing that made perfect sense, and the thing that every country in Europe also says. Basically, if the United States lets you out, we'll let you in. I mean, that makes sense, doesn't it? If you're clear to leave the country and not, you know, on you know, bail bond or something like that, then, you know, it's perfectly okay for you to come here. I don't see what the big deal is. Why? How is the country better off for somebody who had a 9-year-old, you know, record in the past for having them not be around? Makes no sense. Anyway, that's why I'm here. Now people know that, and they also know why I'm a bit critical of Canada right now. But let's just leave that where it is. Moving on to other things. Well, Spain has expelled 45,000 immigrants as of last year. They did that in 1 year. Hats off to Spain, yeah. Spain has unveiled a multi-million-dollar surveillance system to protect its southern coast from the immigrants who brave treacherous waters to enter the country. Radar sensors and night vision cameras will monitor the 110 kilometers of Spanish coastline closest to... Can anyone guess the country they don't want people coming from?
France.
Very good, but no, that's wrong.
Morocco?
Yeah, Morocco. Because they're in Africa, you see. Yeah, they wouldn't close off the border to France or any other European country.
Andorra?
No, Andorra. People in Andorra have been quelled, I think. Anyway, many clandestine migrants start their journey in Morocco. The Integrated External Vigilance System. Yeah, I'm not kidding. Integrated External Vigilance System has cost $140 million to construct, and it has been billed as the first of its kind in Europe. I bet they could have hired a lot of the people that were trying to get to the country from Morocco to help them build this stupid thing in the first place.
Well, at least it's integrated, so we know it's not racist.
Yeah, isn't that nice? It comes amid growing concerns within the wealthy European Union over illegal immigration, which many political leaders fear fuels the electoral chances of far-right movements against mainstream parties. That's kind of a hard sentence to follow, so let's go over it a little bit. It basically comes amid growing concerns within the EU over the issue of illegal immigration, and I guess they're afraid that the more illegal immigration there is, the more far-right movements there will be, or something like that.
Although the immigrants themselves are not the far-right movement.
No, they're not the far-right movement. In fact, if you get more immigrants coming in and voting, then you can probably get rid of the far-right movement. But I'm sure they haven't thought quite that far ahead. The most popular route into Spain, for those of you who want to try, if you're an illegal immigrant, is across the Strait of Gibraltar, which is just 14 kilometers wide at Tarifa, which is Europe's southernmost point. The trip, often undertaken in packed rubber boats, is a hazardous one. The Spanish police say they have rescued 730 people from the sea and the strait since 2000, while humanitarian organizations say several thousand are likely to have drowned in that period. And that's the situation over there. High tech used to keep people in their respective places. Speaking of matters like that, officials of the National Aeronautics and Space Administration have told Northwest Airlines security specialists that the agency is developing brain monitoring devices in cooperation with a commercial firm, which it did not identify. Space technology would be adapted to receive and analyze brainwave and heartbeat patterns, then feed that data into computerized programs, and this is a quote, to detect passengers who potentially might pose a threat. That's according to briefing documents obtained by the Washington Times. NASA wants to use non-invasive neuroelectric sensors embedded in gates to collect tiny electric signals that all brains and hearts transmit. Computers would apply statistical algorithms to correlate physiological patterns with computerized data on travel routines, criminal background, and credit information from hundreds to thousands of data sources.
Wait, say that again.
All of that?
No, just the last bit.
Computers would apply statistical algorithms to correlate to physiological patterns with computerized data on travel routines, criminal background, and credit information from hundreds to thousands of data sources.
All those data sources sound a lot more relevant than brainwaves.
Well,
but if you have two people of, let's say, Middle Eastern descent on this plane, and their travel patterns are suspicious, and their credit card purchases are suspicious, and one of them is happy and relaxed, and the other one is agitated.
How do you feel when you get on an airplane, especially after going through all this security crap? A lot of people are agitated. A lot of people are nervous. You know, it's the scale's going to go off the roof here. It's nonsense. And plus, you know, that's not even taking into account the idea of trying to actually read somebody's brainwaves. I mean, talk about, you know, some right to privacy. We're actually going to... I've brought this up in the past. Years ago, I said if the authorities could read brainwaves, they would say that they needed to do that in order to detect criminal activity. It looks like we're getting a lot closer to that. You know, they're actually trying to do something like that. It's a feeble attempt. In fact, NASA has come out recently with another statement. NASA managers have said published media reports suggesting the agency plans to read the minds of potential terrorists go too far and ignore the facts and science behind the research. The articles were based on a NASA presentation which served as talking points for a meeting with Northwest Airlines in December of 2001. The presentation was in response to the call from the federal government for all agencies to look inward and find what could be done to help in the war on terrorism. NASA does not have the capability to read minds, nor are we suggesting that would be done, said Robert Pierce, director of NASA's Strategy and Analysis Division. Our scientists were asked to think outside the box with regards to ideas that could aid the nation in the war on terrorism, and that's what they are doing. They're thinking in science fiction terms, in fact. We have not approved any research in this area, and because of the sensitivity of such research, we will seek independent review before we do. Well, I think they should seek review of the general public and see what where that leads them. The information contained in the presentation identified research and development challenges that NASA is currently aware of in the information technology arena, and the agency offered some limited thoughts and proposed possible solutions in this field. So that's where that stands. Imagine having your thought patterns analyzed at any time. It's quite invasive. All right, some more nonsensical news. The world's largest record companies have sued major internet service and network providers that occurred on Friday, alleging their routing systems allowed users to access the China-based listenforever.com website. That's listen, spelled out, number four, ever.com. And according to them, that website allows for unlawful musical recordings, right? The unlawful copying of musical recordings. Now, plaintiffs in the suit include such major labels as UMG Recordings, a unit of Vivendi Universal, Sony Music Entertainment, a unit of Sony, the RCA record label, and Warner Brothers. Defendants are AT&T Broadband. Isn't this great when they sue each other? Cable and Wireless, Advanced Network Services, and UUNET Technologies. Now, the interesting thing about this, I don't know if anybody else has picked up on this, but look who's suing, look who's being sued. Now, Warner Brothers is suing all these providers. Now, what's a major provider? AOL. AOL is owned, or AOL actually owns Time Warner. So, Warner Brothers Records is a subsidiary of AOL. Now, why aren't they suing AOL? Obviously because AOL is part of them, but AOL does exactly what they're claiming that these other people do. They're really starting to lose themselves in their own lack of logic. So it's it's an awfully weird story. I don't know where that's going to go. You basically have huge entertainment industry suing the huge communications industry. And I don't know what it is they expect people to do. Somehow block access to selected internet sites in parts of the world. You know, it's something that you can't really do very easily. I don't have the story here, but I had heard that there was a provider somewhere in the country. If someone has the name of it, please call in and provide it, that has actually blocked all RIAA sites from accessing their customers to prevent the Recording Industry of America from tampering with computers of people that they suspect of having copyright violations on their systems. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about how the RIAA wants immunity from any kind of prosecution if they go and vandalize computers of people they suspect of trading copyrighted material. It's an unbelievable development, that in itself. But this is kind of interesting, too, that a provider would actually step up and protect its customers. Of course, it's probably a useless gesture because they could come from anywhere. They wouldn't just come from RIAA sites. They'd come from all kinds of different places. But symbolically, I think it sends a very strong message. Okay, what else? Well, here's something interesting. This is a kind of story that just makes you feel all nice and warm all over. The state is spending nearly $4 million to equip highway rest stops with security cameras and emergency call boxes.
What state?
The state of Illinois.
Hmm.
The system, expected to be in place by mid-October, will let people contact state police if they feel threatened at any of the state's 53 rest stops and will give police a record of crimes committed there. People needing help simply push a button on the emergency box that automatically alerts authorities and sends them pictures from that camera so they can see what's going on. And here's the quote of the day from Mike Mansour, a spokesman for the Illinois Department of Transportation. It adds to our homeland security. Isn't it great? I mean, you know, you had a potentially good idea there, and then you wreck the whole thing with a stupid statement like that. What's it got to do with homeland security? It's basically stopping crime, you know? It's homeland security business. It's really starting to get annoying. Everything is homeland security, this and that. All right, our phone number, 212-209-2900. Place your calls now. And, Mike, you got a thread in the mail, did you?
Something like that. I got an email from Mr. Lance Cottrell, who's the president of Anonymizer, Inc.
Anonymizer, a service that... Well, I used to use that service a lot more than I do now, because I think it costs money now, or it's hard to use, or something like that. They made it hard. I used to use that all the time to connect to things without having my address plastered all over the place I was visiting.
Well, I wrote a paper about 8 months ago in which I described an anonymizing service for internet telephone calls, which I wrote some code for. And apparently, if this offends them greatly, he sees that my paper uses the word anonymizer as a generic term, and just wanted to let me know that it is their registered trademark. Please use a term like privacy service or privacy proxy instead.
Oh, anonymize this, please. How can they... this is really getting out of hand. I never would have expected it from them, you know, to be...
I believe he doesn't have a legal leg to stand on. As I was telling Mike, you know, unless he goes the route of saying anonymizer brand privacy proxy software...
Mm-hmm.
It's gone the way of aspirin, a former trademark that's entered the generic language. He's screwed.
If you look at the literature for the protocol I was working with, anonymizer is used all the time as a generic term.
Is it not a word in a dictionary?
I mean, don't know.
Anonymity is.
Anonymity.
So anonymize is just a natural transgression of the word if it doesn't exist already. You know, that's how language works.
An anonymizer is one who anonymizes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Besides the fact it doesn't mean the same thing as privacy. Anonymity is related to privacy, but they're not the same.
Another good point.
Let's start a street gang called the Anonymizers, all right? And then they can try to mess with us. If anyone's interested in this, see me at the 2600 meeting, you know, and bring leather jackets and stuff. We'll have fun.
And a mask.
Yeah, the masks are good. They're always good. That way we get the New York City police involved, too. Anonymizer. Okay. I'm sure that'll get some attention. Let's see, we have some listener mail here. Recently you had mentioned that someone was charged $1.50 by Sprint PCS to talk to a representative. I had to talk to Sprint's customer care recently myself, and I mentioned that I had heard people were being charged to talk to someone. She told me that Sprint was beginning to charge those customers who contacted representatives frequently. She said these tended to be customers with bad credit. She went on to tell me that these people contacted them up to 5 times a day to request credits, complain, and attempt to restore suspended service. those people. She then told me that premium customers, such as myself, would never be charged. Since I was getting my number changed, I was told I had to call back from a phone other than my cell phone so it could be reprogrammed. She said even a payphone would do. Oddly, when I then called the number from a payphone, I was told there would be a $3 charge for the call. The service representative I talked to this time said that I shouldn't be charged and credited the $3, but he had no idea why the charge came up. Hopefully somebody else has more details on this. Now, here's something else interesting. While I was on hold, I was reminded by the little recording that dialing *4 on a Sprint phone would give me my minutes usage without incurring airtime. A message on *4 now indicates that airtime usage will be incurred for using the service beginning August 26th. Isn't that something? They're actually going to charge you to use a feature on your phone to find out how much time you've used on your phone. They're geniuses. They really are, you know?
Would you like all that synopsized?
Sure, go ahead.
Sprint is the scum of the earth.
Yeah, yeah. What does that make their customers, though? Yeah.
Screwed.
I went in Thursday for my college's, a different letter. I went in Thursday for my college's assessment day. Basically, it's just surveying and gauging the quality of the freshmen. After the usual confusion of which of the 30 buildings I'm supposed to be in when I show up, it's wait a minute. After the usual confusion, first survey is nothing unusual. Okay. It's just asking if we like the school's international focus. Then suddenly things became utterly frightening. I dipped my hand back in the packet they gave us at the speaker's instructions and pulled out an unsuspicious white survey. I'm not sure what an unsuspicious white survey exactly looks like. The speaker tells us it's Bush's new SERPA survey, S-E-R-P-A. It's meant to gauge the quality of the college and that we'd be taking it again to see how we've improved. I opened the survey. I was expecting questions regarding the college, but of course in the dawn of Oceania, things aren't that simple. I started going through the survey and the questions had nothing to do with the college. Instead, the survey was dedicated almost entirely to my political beliefs, and ominously how open I was with my beliefs and if I had ever participated in demonstrations and will I continue to participate in demonstrations. The entire test was nothing more than gauging my potential as a political dissident. It contained everything from how I feel on abortion to military spending. And I guess it was a real wake-up call for this person. Anyway.
I'd love to see a copy of this, if anyone...
Yeah, please, send us...
...is starting college soon and can smuggle one out. I'd love to see it.
Yeah.
This may not be what people think it is. I remember something like that happening to me years ago. And later the professor comes out and says, well, this is just to show you, you know, what can happen in a police state sort of thing. But be wary. Mm-hmm. Could go either way.
Okay, what else we got here? You're off the hook. I'm not sure if this is of interest, but I'm a senior in high school. I'm 17 years old. The other day in my government class, my teacher handed out a survey on which we were told to write what we believed in. He wound up reading mine in front of the whole class and then announced that I was a communist and was the enemy of the United States. My first response was actually not to be amused by it, but I came to realize he is the type of person who believes that the government is always right. And after this, I told him that he was the one displaying communist ideals, and I was kicked out of the class for the rest of the day. In the first place, I think this guy has a major attitude problem, as I did nothing to disrespect him. However, being a high school student, it is very unlikely I would be able to convince anyone of this injustice, since I'm just a kid. Well, first of all, I don't know what your belief in an economic system has to do with the way you are. A better word for him would have been maybe totalitarian, right? Does that work better for you?
It's a bit of a mouthful.
Yeah, well, it is, but it's also something that maybe he can choke on, you know, when he tries to interpret it after he's called that. But basically, yeah, you know, there's a lot of ignorance out there in the classroom. A lot of it's coming from teachers, you know, people who don't believe in questioning. Now, teaching a class, think about the hypocrisy of that. And to chastise somebody for their beliefs in front of the entire class, that's just unbelievable that that would actually happen. It happens all the time, but it's pretty shameful. So hopefully people will just keep the spirit up and realize there's lots of other people out there who are fighting the same fight. All right, what else we have here? In the last show, you discussed street names. This little bit of trivia might interest you. Several technology companies have interesting business addresses. For example, the address of Apple's headquarters is One Infinite Loop in Cupertino, California. Red Hat, producers of a popular Linux distribution, were once located at One Disk Drive. Microsoft's address isn't amusing or quirky. It's more of a statement of company policy, One Microsoft Way. Thanks for that bit of information. And, dear Manuel, I can't blame you for not understanding the accent in Newfoundland. We were talking about that last week. Frankly, the rest of us in Canada can't either. What confuses me is how you can so quickly pick up on Rebel's voice during call-ins, since his voice and accent sounds exactly the same to me as every third caller. Signed, Steve in Edmonton. Well, that's a scary thought that we're walking around sounding like Rebel. But I suppose it's popular, possible it is, for people that, you know, aren't able to fine-tune the various accents within accents.
You've also had years of practice.
Yeah, that's true. Every single week. And I guess that means it's time once again. Oh, yes, and this story that Jim brought in concerning Earthlink. Earthlink added a feature 2 days ago, on Monday, that lets subscribers block pop-up ads on the Internet. Earthlink, an Internet provider based in Atlanta, claimed it was the first major Internet provider to make available free software that can prevent advertising windows from appearing above or below their main browser window. Subscribers can disable the software for websites they specify where a pop-up window may be part of the content. So I wonder if it stops pop-unders. I find those to be even more annoying than pop-ups. But play around with that software. Let us know what happens. Okay, let's take some phone calls. 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. My name's Larry. And 20 years ago, on my PhD thesis on the esoteric behavior of paramecium, I had that copyrighted. With all this stuff with the RIAA, do I have the same rights to get the software to explore every computer on the Internet that might have copied my thesis,
well,
and be immune from prosecution from destroying any computer hardware the same way that the record companies have?
I don't see why. If you use their logic, why don't you have the right to go and you know, disrupt their communications, cut off their Internet access, and go a few steps beyond that, go to their house with a baseball bat and smash their windows? I mean, where is it going to stop? Where is it going to end? You know, if you think you've been wrong, you can just bypass the entire system and take matters into your own hands. That's how they want to do things, and it shows you how little respect they have for the system.
But okay.
Good luck. Good luck with your fight.
Okay.
All right, 212-209-2900. Let's go over here. Good evening, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you tonight?
Good, how are you?
All right, I got a similar story about the border.
Oh, yeah? What is it?
1973, New York. I guess what was going around, if you got caught with, let's say, a marijuana cigarette, the people would want you to turn over two people. And in other words, you'd have to entrap a couple other people to kind of get off. And what went on was, in Rockefeller's way, this wasn't designated as a narcotic or a marijuana offense. And so I got a lawyer, Cohen and Cohen, from Fifth Avenue, so I wouldn't have to entrap two other people. And then about 4 months ago, I was going across, like you were, from New York into Canada. And they asked me, had I ever been arrested? Not convicted, just arrested.
Yeah.
I said, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, we can't let you in because it doesn't show if it was a misdemeanor offense or a federal offense with narcotics. We can't let you in. And that's, he said, that's the problem you have with New York State with the draconian drug laws. And the when you pay $2,500 for a Fifth Avenue lawyer, that doesn't work either. They said, well, you won't have a record. So I found out almost 30 years later that I still have a record in Canada's eyes.
That's unbelievable. It really is.
Also, with the O'Reilly factor, he was grilling these people about the porosity of the border. Now, this is Tom from Costa Rica. I'm calling from New Jersey. The guy said, before you go there, Bill, I don't know if he was the prime minister or member of parliament, he said 75% of the people that are illegal aliens coming into Canada are from the United States. So, the porosity of our border coming from Mexico, et cetera, with people getting paid to bring in laborers, paying coyotes $3,700 and going into Florida and working the scene there in construction, which I know about, just, you know, percolates all the way up to the border there. And that's where most of the illegal money is in our country.
Okay. Thanks for the information.
Okay.
All right. Good luck.
Night.
And it really stinks, too, because he probably can never go back there without having to deal with the same questioning. I mean, most times, you know, they don't stop you, and I guess you can go through, but if you're stopped again after trying to get through once and being turned back, I imagine you can get into all kinds of problems then, so it's just not worth the effort of trying to do that. And yeah, they can pass all kinds of judgment on you, you know. In his case, it wasn't even showing a felony record because they couldn't tell. You know, they had doubts, so they said, sorry, we can't let you in, turn them back. And it's really a sad statement that that they've acted that way. And I don't know how long this has been going on for, but it's my first encounter with it, and it's really not a good thing. Good evening, you're on the air. Okay, good evening, you're on the air. Speak up.
Hey, I'm Faber.
How you doing?
Great.
What's up?
I'm calling off the hook.
Yeah, well, you're on the air. What's up?
Oh, cool. Sorry, I'm getting on webcast. I guess it's delayed.
It's very delayed, yes.
Yeah. Well, I was listening to your show a little while ago, and you were talking about the CBD TPA
mm-hmm.
and how they could use it so to alter history, in a sense. Well, I was on archive.org. And I was looking around for a copy of DCSS, because I'm from Canada, and supposedly the MCA doesn't apply here, and I wanted a copy just for future use. And archive.org actually has copies of DCSS and the CSS auth.tar zip thing somewhere. And anyway, I was thinking about this, and they could use the DMCA to edit archive.org, and so they could use the DMCA to edit history.
That's
and
true.
That just freaked me out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Archive.org has some interesting things on it. It's very incomplete, unfortunately, but
yeah.
It's really the only site I know of that's trying. And you can look back in time and see how certain sites were. I think it's very important, especially news sites, especially government sites, where they may try and say, no, we never said that. This was never the case.
Oh, yeah.
And unless somebody is out there meticulously saving everything and comparing, they may very well get away with it. Because, you know, when things were printed on paper, you had something tangible you could hold on to. And those days are rapidly going away. And they can get away with, you know, 1984-ish type of, you know, just erasing history and making it the way they want to.
Yeah, well, I just finished reading that book, and I've been noticing all the little tiny things that are going around on in my world, and I'm like, whoa, wait, that's just like 1984.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah. Someone reported that there was a copy of that in the Oval Office. It was a paperback version. It was folded, and there were little highlighter notes in it. I'm wondering if George W. Bush is taking notes.
Mm.
All right, thanks for your call.
Great, bye.
There's a new site called, I don't remember if it's Memory Hole or TheMemoryHole.com or .org, in which they're dedicated to finding this sort of thing, not only on the net, but news conferences and such, and keeping it in people's minds.
And that's what it was called in the book, Memory Hole.
That's where they took the name.
Yeah, where they basically changed news stories and threw the original ones into a memory hole. Good evening, you're on the air. Go ahead, speak up.
Oh, hello. I'm calling from New Jersey, and I just found out from a friend of mine that we now have a choice of local phone service. And apparently right now, our normal phone carrier is Verizon, but we now have the option of switching to AT&T for local, which is kind of nice. Apparently they come right out to the pole and switch the wire, and then you have services through them, and it looks like the price might even be competitive.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure over time I'll dislike them as much as I like Verizon.
Yeah, I know they've been doing this for some time in various parts of the country. And I don't think they've matched the price of the local carrier yet, as far as coming up with good deals. But then again, they might have something in conjunction with long distance that might be more of a savings than, say, using Verizon and then some long distance company.
So we'll see how that works out. But the thing that I really wanted to call about was this idea that's been talked about the past couple shows about getting telemarketers calling you right after you get off the phone.
Uh-huh.
And what I'm suspecting is perhaps they're doing the same sort of thing. There's one of those pay-for-by-use features that you have for, like, callback when you want to order tickets online or something like that. And you just dial in this star code. And what happens is the phone company at the switch will actually figure out when the line goes free and to try to dial it immediately for you, which works sometimes, which doesn't work other times. But what I'm wondering is if the telemarketers somehow are getting a deal on this and get it and buying that service from the local phone companies also.
Well, you're talking about Star 66, which basically camps onto a busy signal. But the thing is, first of all, it has to be a busy signal. Many people have call waiting. And you'd come in on call waiting unless the phone was actually busy. The other thing is that many times these telemarketers are coming from phone numbers that you can't see. It always says unavailable or out of area, something like that. Not private, but basically they're calling from a PBX or something that doesn't send caller ID information. You cannot use Star 66 if you're calling from something like that. Your number does need to be transmitted. You have to be part of the whole SS7 system. So I don't think that that's what they're doing. And plus, it would be a lot of trouble to have to star 66 everybody who is busy and then keep track of which ones were calling back, and then you have to pick up the phone and know that that's what it was. I don't know. I think if something is going on, it's something a little bit more complex than that.
Very good. I thought it was just chance, but it happened twice to me today.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
I just happened to be at home this afternoon. And twice, when I got off the call talking to somebody locally,
mm-hmm.
I immediately got a call from a telemarketer.
Do you have call waiting?
We have call waiting.
And it didn't come in on call waiting. That's interesting.
It did not come in on call waiting, and we have call waiting with a caller ID,
uh-huh.
and that didn't happen. So if it hadn't been for that, I would have been going along with the line that everyone's been talking about that says it's just coincidental.
Yeah.
But just the fact that it happened twice today in the space of a couple hours really makes me wonder.
Oh, well, let's see what happens after this phone call.
Okay. Thanks very much.
All right. Good luck.
Okay. Good day.
212-209-2900. Let's go over here. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, hello.
How you doing?
I got it. It was just on a line.
Uh-huh.
I got this service from Verizon called Call Intercept.
Okay.
And you pay $5 a month, you know. And it seems like it works with all these telemarketers.
Is it Star 77?
It's called Call Intercept.
Yeah. Or Star 78, I'm not sure which one it is.
No, it's called Call Intercept, where it's a service where you can't get through if your number is unblocked or it has an unavailable on it.
Uh-huh.
All unannounced calls is intercepted, and it makes them, say their name on a recording before they give it to you.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's the same service. Is that what we were referring to, Call Interceptor? It's you say it's being offered by Verizon?
Yeah. Uh-huh. It works. I haven't gotten a call from a telemarketer since.
So when somebody calls it, they say their name, and then you get a phone call with this person's name, and you get the option of accepting or rejecting the call, right?
Yeah, Call Intercept answers it, and when they call, they get Call Intercept,
mm-hmm.
and Call Intercept tells them that you can't get through with an unblocked call.
Uh-huh.
And it makes them give their name.
Uh-huh.
And if they don't give their name, they don't get through.
Now, in California, there's a version of this system where you can hit a button to send your caller ID. So
yeah.
that means that your caller ID was sent anyway, even though you dialed star 67 or have it on all call block.
Mm-hmm.
But you can hit a button after you place this phone call without hanging up, and your caller ID will be unblocked and sent to the person, and the call will complete that way, which I think is interesting, and it also shows how, you know, Star 67 really doesn't do much except block the number to the central office, but that can easily be unblocked by software.
I mean, no calls get through, unavailable,
mm-hmm.
private, none of them get through, even
right.
if you have a cellular phone.
Yeah, no, that's what the service should do.
Yeah.
All right, thanks for letting us know.
Thank you.
212-209-2900. Good evening, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, good evening, Mr. Goldstein. My name's Ian. I'm calling from Brooklyn.
How you doing?
Old school fan of 2600. I'd like to thank you for all your good work.
Thank you.
but I'm calling about your Canadian experience. I had a similar experience in the late 80s, so we could cover a couple of decades here. I was a member of the Irish American Unity Conference in the late 80s, and we had a convention in Michigan to highlight the American government's policy of visa denial to members of Sinn Féin. And Gerry Adams, the president of Sinn Féin at the time, was denied a visa to come into the United States. So this entire conference crossed the border into Canada. Mm-hmm. And when we all got to Canada, we found out that each and every single car was stopped at the border because they were told that a bunch of terrorists were meeting in Canada. And the car that I was traveling in, I was traveling with Paul O'Dwyer, deceased former historian for the city of New York, brother of the mayor, a member of the New York City Comptroller's Office, and two little old ladies. And they stopped the car, and they had us go into the little, I don't know, you called it the booth after the checkpoint.
Yeah.
And they went through the literature in the bags of the old ladies and the distinguished gentlemen I was traveling with and commented on each and every thing that they found in the bags. And it was purely political. And it was because the American government, we found out, told the Canadian government, give these people a very difficult time.
Yeah, I mean, where else are they getting this information from? The fact that they're able to tie into American criminal databases and, you know, check out all this information. They're basically, they're taking orders, and they're, you know, they're harassing people that are deemed harassable in certain places. It's sickening. It really is.
Now, what we were told when we were going to Canada was that Gerry Adams would be given a visa to come to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
He apparently got on a plane, came to Canada, and as soon as he got off the plane, was told he would not be admitted and had to get back on the plane and fly back to Belfast. So we had to have, like, a video uplink from Belfast to Canada. But we were doing this to show how we as Americans were being denied a basic right of freedom of expression. And since then, Gerry Adams has sat down in the White House, and Martin McGuinness is the head of education for Northern Ireland. But it seems that Canada is still more than willing to pick and choose who they let in. The other part of that that I thought that just very clearly tied in was that in the late 60s, early 70s, a number of people in Northern Ireland were arrested without trial and turned and given criminal records. And they have been denied visa rights to come into this country because they were just picked up. So what Canada is doing to American citizens trying to cross the border of the United States still does to Northern Irish citizens.
Yeah, and citizens all over the world.
Yes.
It's really horrible. And the thing though, that is eye-opening here, if you get arrested for anything, it could be something that will be used against you many, many years down the road, even if it was a minor thing, even if it was something that, you know, is not even considered a crime in some parts of the world. You know, like voicing your opinion at a demonstration or something like that, they could use that. They could find that in your record 20 years from now and say that, you know, they can't let you in because that's just the way they are. These rules have to be looked at. They have to be analyzed. They have to be challenged. And I think, you know, I still have some faith in Canada as a system that they might have a chance of getting things changed if they speak up loudly enough, but they have to want to do that.
Right.
You know, I in this country, I don't have that faith anymore because I think that the people's will just be ignored no matter what and met with, you know, cement walls and machine guns. Unfortunately, that's the way things seem to be going here. But over there still seems to be some kind of accountability that the government seems to feel towards the people. I don't know if that's going to last. I don't know if that's even still in existence. People in Canada obviously would know better.
Well, what we felt, and again, this was like 10, 15 years ago, but that there was a direct influence by the British government on the policies of Canada,
mm-hmm.
that they were giving a hard time to an Irish-American political organization, and that they brought us into a room where we were interrogated with a picture of the Queen hanging on the wall. A little additional factor there.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay, I appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks. Good luck. The other thing that I didn't mention was after they had denied us entry, after they said, sorry, you have to turn around and go back to the United States, and there's a little green sign that says, you know, USA, and with an arrow that you have to go on this little road of rejected people and turn around and go back. After that point where they told us we'd have to do that, they wanted to search the car. What's the point of searching the car at that point? We're not even going into the country. But they had the right to do it, they said, and they intended to, you know, exercise that right. So another 20 minutes was wasted while they went through the car looking for God knows what. So the whole thing really was ridiculous and silly. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, I have a question. I just received a phone bill from some of the other company, Sprint.
Mm-hmm.
Telling me that I owe them for 477 minutes of incoming calls, right?
Okay.
They didn't tell me where the calls are coming from or anything about that, which suggests to me that they could say that I owe them for 10 million calls and I should pay them $10 billion, and they can't prove it, and I can't prove it either. So what am I supposed to do about that?
Well, I do know they have the capability. In fact, I've seen this on some phone bills. I'm not sure if it was Sprint or if it was VoiceStream. That they do print the number of the incoming call on the phone bill. But they certainly have the capability because it shows up on your phone. You know, it's there. It's recorded someplace.
I agree. And they tell me that it's the FCC regulations, and that's the reason why they can't tell me. And I'm saying, but
yeah.
I believe that Verizon can show, so why can't you?
When in doubt, blame the FCC. I don't think that's at all a rule. I can check and see if VoiceStream is a company that does that. If so, then they'll have very little recourse in explaining that, because if some companies are doing it and they're not, as clearly just a feature they're not offering.
Right, but
they should.
But it's like, you know, I mean, they're going into, as I use this to describe this, going into dim sum and buying that. You don't know exactly what you ordered, but it was good anyway.
Right.
You know, how do you know? How do you know those 477 minutes are real?
Do you pay with a credit card? Do you pay voice Sprint with a credit card?
No, you know, you get a cell phone and you...
Well,
you use the minutes. Incoming calls. How do you
I know, but what I'm saying is if you paid your bill with a credit card, you could say to the credit card company, I dispute these minutes. They're not giving me any proof that these calls actually were made to me. For all I know, they could be making the number 477 out of whole cloth, and the credit card company would at least, for the first couple of steps, go to bat for you. If you're paying Sprint directly, I think you have a bigger problem.
Yeah, but the phone companies do get away with murder, you know,
yes.
And they could probably point to something in your contract that says that you'll pay whatever they say without a question. I don't know. You
now
just have to be very careful.
Let's say I took the contract out over the phone and they never actually sent me a hard copy. Aren't they obliged to send me a hard copy?
Absolutely, yes.
So in which case, I don't have a contract.
Uh-huh.
Because I took it out on the phone.
Well, you should have there might be a copy online, but then if you don't have internet access, that's something to pursue. You definitely should have a copy of the contract. All right?
What do you think about the 477 minutes? Is that something to pursue incoming calls?
Sounds like you're a popular person, but I don't know. I don't know how many incoming minutes one person can get. You know, it depends on your calling habits. If they are somewhat in the realm of what you usually get, then yeah, I'd say it's a possibility. If it's, you know, if last month it was 10 minutes and now it's 477, then yeah, you should definitely look into that. But we're going to move on. Thanks for that call. 212-209-2900 is our phone number. And let's take another phone call up here. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, I'm last tonight, I guess. Hello?
Yes, you've fallen into your natural place, I guess.
I want to mention about that call ID intercepting.
Mm-hmm.
What if you're using your calling card and you're trying to check your answering machine? If you're calling from out of state, or, you know, obviously if you dial 0 area code a number, it's not going to show a caller ID.
What?
If you're dialing your number and you have that call intercept service where if the number does not show on caller ID, it will not place the call, it will not accept the call, it'll tell the caller, please say your name or whatever. What if it's trying to call with a calling card?
The solution then is to not get the call intercept service if you're in the habit of calling yourself with a calling card.
Okay, but what if somebody needs to call you collect, or what if somebody is, what if they're just calling your wife and you... I don't know.
Well, very often these days when you do 0+, numbers are passed along anyway. Numbers are even passed along on calling cards.
In call intercept, if somebody's there at the other end, you will hear a voice saying, you know, this person has call intercept, please state your name, and then that gets forwarded over to them. If you're trying to dial your answering machine and leave your messages, you are the idiot for having put call intercept on and not taking it off, knowing you'd be out.
Right. Now, also, I'd like to mention that billboards are becoming annoying. Did you ever see a building where there's just a billboard?
They're becoming annoying? Yeah, they're pretty damn annoying. They really are.
Did you ever try and look out your office window and just, you can't because it's just a billboard there?
Yeah, it happens to me all the time. It's, you know, what are you going to do, you know? Maybe call up a radio show and complain about it. Thanks for the idea. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hey, look, you have a window in the office.
Yeah.
I have a question and a comment quickly. The survey you were talking about early on, you said that it turned out to be more of a political survey. Is that something on the web or a hard copy?
The I don't know. I haven't seen it myself. I'd like to know if it's online. It was handed to this person on a piece of paper, but I don't...
Because I was saying, the one that you were talking about earlier where you had to send something in, send in a survey, and you said maybe they were really interested in political information and not really the marketing data. I was thinking maybe they're really interested in collecting DNA.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also...
we'll see about that.
Yeah. The Economist about 3 weeks ago had an article called FMRI, Fundamental Magnetic Resonance Imaging, about brainwave, how the crime... in England is using brainwaves for manipulating people and getting information.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there, though, because we're out of time.
Okay.
But we'll encourage people to pursue that. We're out of here till next week. We'll see you again for another edition of Off the Hook next Wednesday night. Till then, have yourselves a good night. Stay tuned for the Personal Computer Show. Good night.
There are no bounds set to the time, yet you waste it still. Like grains of sand, you watch it go. There's no time to be lost. You'll pay the cost, so get it right. There's no way out of here. When you come in, you're in for good.
FM from 12 midnight to 3 a.m. Trench Town, the music, culture, and peopleness of Jamaica's first inner city heritage tourism district. Featuring exclusively for the first time on radio, Beverly Kelso and Cherry Green of the original Wailers. Other guests include Trench Town culture ambassadors Valerie Higgs, the sister of reggae superstar Joe Higgs, Michael Williams, and the president of Trenchtown Development Association, Michael Smith, and others. Trenchtown on WBAI 99.5 FM, Friday, August 23rd, 2002, from 12 midnight to 3 a.m.
The Midnight Ravers, where every show is a special.
Music.